Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
Hello and welcome to the Two Robbies podcast, your destination for in-depth discussion and analysis of the Premier League. I'm Robbie Musto, he's Robbie Earle, and here are today's topics. It's advantage Liverpool in the title race after Manchester City and Arsenal play out a stale 0-0 draw. Jurgen Klopp outfoxes potential successor in Roberto De Zerbi as Liverpool come from behind to win 2-1 against Brighton. Erik ten Hag's future as Manchester United boss begins to look bleaker after a poor performance in a 1-1 draw at Brentford. And Robbie Earle travelled to Tottenham to watch their victory against Luton Town and had a special interview with the man who scored the game winner. That's what we've got coming up in today's episode. All right, Robbie Earle, my friend.
Yes, sir.
Hope you're doing well. I know you're having a little bit of a trip, which is great. Great to catch up with you again. Okay, so let's start with the big game, Rob. And we've been talking about it and building up for weeks on end, it feels like. Man City 0, Arsenal 0 in a game that we'll get to Liverpool. It's a great day for Liverpool on this Sunday.
Yeah.
But, I mean, how disappointed were you, Rob, with this game in general, you know, coming out of 0-0?
Just before I get into game, Rob, let our viewers and listeners know, I'm over in the UK on a bit of a special trip that hopefully will get revealed later in the series for NBC. I'm actually at my mum's house Easter Sunday at my mum's. I'm back in the box room. It's like I've been in a Tory 40 years ago, back in the box room that I grew up in. So obviously if sound and things are not quite as good as they are, I do apologise. Okay. But I did manage to see the game. I watched the game. I watched the analyses and saw the whole thing play out, Robin, and I possibly, I'll give you my sort of big headline thoughts and you tell me whether they differ from maybe some of the things you talked on in studio with Rebecca and Tim today. So before the game, I'm thinking this is a game for control freaks. Both these managers, both these teams like to control the ball. Arsenal are controlling in a way where they stop the opposition getting to goal. City control you with possession and move you, and especially down the central areas of the pitch. So two control freaks going for the game. I got the sense, Rob, that the importance of the game, both teams appreciated. I thought Arsenal in particular was set up in a way where I thought a clean sheet was a priority. I saw not getting beat, and not playing to not get beat, but being doing what was required to not allow City to get looks at goal. I think only one on shot on target in 90 minutes away at Manchester City, where they've not got a great record, is an incredible start for Arsenal. And do you know my takeaway, Rob, was better result for Arsenal, a learning experience for Arsenal. Not the mauling or even the openings that some might have thought. And I was a bit more well done Arsenal. Not a great game. Didn't particularly play in the attacking areas of the pitch. In fact, where I thought no midfield or striker or attacking player on any area of the pitch looked particularly in form. Looked like they were going to particularly make something. Jesus had a couple of shot chances for Arsenal. Trossard maybe should do better later on. Haaland didn't quite look at it. Got caught up with a fight with Gabriel and Saliba, I thought were excellent. But sort of my takeaway, Rob, was, OK, Arsenal, you've shown me something today. You've shown me you can go to Man City, you can tough it out, you can do a little bit of parking that's not really you, that you score your goals young. You didn't go and play a little bit open. You didn't go and get done. And you know what? A little bit of Jose Mourinho type. If that's what it takes to get us a title, I'm kind of okay with it, mate. This team that scores so many goals, that play with such flair, I'm kind of okay that Arsenal have shown me on a one-off day they can do something else that might be a step towards winning the title.
Yeah, listen, mate, you make a lot of sense. You make a lot of sense. It's funny, you know, because of the two of us, you know, I'm the one that would normally say that, and I think you're the one that wants a little bit more.
Yeah,
I don't know,
the football. Like, and the,
yeah, I mean, I think maybe my expectation, Rob, and this is me, it's just on me, and maybe Rebecca and Tim a little bit in the studio as well. I just felt it was a moment where Arsenal could really seize control of everything and kind of show everybody that they've grown to a point where they can be physical, they can defend, but they can play. Yeah. And they can make Arsenal run around a little bit. You know, we saw Man City get ragged and stretched and stressed against Liverpool. And I know they're different to Arsenal. I guess I was hoping for more of a front foot. Right, we're going to play a little bit. We're going to make it hard for you. But it wasn't like that. And then, you know, what we saw was durable Arsenal, strong Arsenal. Mm-hmm. And both teams, Rob, if I had to kind of summarise the priority of such, is that both were scared of the other. And what I mean by that is that when Man City gave the ball away, or Arsenal had it, they were really, really good and quick to win it back again. They understand that the quality of Arsenal. They were great to get it back with a high press, with a counter press where they have it, they give it away, they get it back again. And they had Arsenal in that old straitjacket I've talked about before where they're smothered and they couldn't get out. But that's credit to the way that City play without the ball. And for Arsenal, did it differently. Behind the ball, centre-backs were outstanding. At times, a low block, you know, defensively deep, forced back by the football of City. And that was it. That was your stalemate. But back to you, Rob. You're right. I mean, that's progression. And Mikel Arteta on the pitch, and when we ran his interview, he was smiling. Like, he was really happy with that, right? The way that they played and getting the point. I mean, like you said, there were so few chances. Let me throw a question back to you, Rob. Given the result of Liverpool, and given what a 0-0 meant in terms of both teams, it's okay to be happy with that, and it's good for Arsenal, but are they now, and we'll get onto Liverpool in a second, it puts some points behind. Like, I know it's only 2 points, it's only one game, but Liverpool's run coming up is pretty winnable, and we know Arsenal's got the Champions League complications and games and stresses and concerns and recoveries after those games. So everybody's happy. Not everybody's happy. Arteta's really happy. Yeah. Was it a missed opportunity, Rob? Was it the right thing to do?
Okay. It's a great question. I'm going to just come to something else you said before that I just want to slightly address as well. In that sometimes, Rob, and I've been, I'm not saying when I'm there it doesn't happen, because when I'm there it absolutely happens, because I get caught up in it as well. We start our production sort of conversations, and me and you will often be chatting on a Wednesday about a game like this. And, you know, we start our theories and our thoughts and our breakdowns and all that kind of stuff. And we'll have a production call and we get a sense of what people are thinking, and Lee Dixon and Greg. And sometimes, Rob, between that group, we can all get in a situation where we convince each other of what's going to happen. So you said me, Tim and Rebecca sort of were saying it wasn't quite a game. Yeah, I'm sitting here maybe because I'm not in those conversations and I'm watching a little bit objectively, like with no other voices around. I'm sat at my mum's on Easter Sunday watching the game, and I'm thinking, that's not bad, you know. I don't mind this. Mm. And maybe that's part of why sometimes you get a slightly skewed or different view when
bias.
You're not.
It's like a little group bias.
You know? Yeah. And so I just wanted to put that there. But the other thing you said, which I thought was actually like handing the advantage to Liverpool, I get the point, and actually the 2-point gap now just does give them an advantage, Rob. There's absolutely more drama left in these 9 games to go, and we'll start to get to the stage, Rob, where the opposition is going to be less than the pressure that the games were on. Think of Arsenal this time last season. April was a nightmare month for Arsenal last season. They got hammered by City. The West Ham game, I think, was it Nottingham Forest, Dunham late on towards the end, or was that early May or whatever? And, you know, teams that were not the biggest team. So I kind of feel like, yes, I've looked at the running and Liverpool possibly, you know, I think have probably got about the mid-time of toughness. But I just felt today, Rob, It was a day when people aren't going to be able to say, oh, Arsenal bottled it. There goes Arsenal. That was the Arsenal we've been saying about. Do you know what? They've answered that a little bit. Because they've gone to City, who score every game. Was it 50-odd games they've scored consecutively?
They've scored home games,
56, 57. I think the last time, you've got to go back to October 2021 against Crystal Palace, and they didn't score. They stopped Man City scoring. They I thought physically, I loved Gabriel and Saliba, Gabriel and Erling Haaland at the end, having a go, sort of mutual respect, arms around each other. I thought it was a good sign for Arsenal. Like, that's respect. That's not an Arsenal team anymore when Pep goes, oh, Arsenal, a brilliant team. Arteta's a great man. A little bit condescending at times when he's beat you 5-0 or 4-1 and he's saying what a great team you are. Today, Arsenal gave him a challenge and made it difficult for them. And they're still in it, Rob, is my point. My big point is they are still very much in this title race with a mentality of that was a big day for us today. We kept Manchester City clean. We're 2 points behind, but that's a massive game out of the way with 9 to go. I think it's a mental win more than a points win for Arsenal.
Just switching over to Man City a little bit, Rob. I'm looking at the league table now. Yeah. 3 points. They're 3 points behind Liverpool. The goal difference is 5 goals worse rather than Liverpool. They slip up again in the next couple of Premier League matches and Liverpool, you know, the gap could get a little tasty. It could get a little big. It's City now.
Robbie Musto. No. Three on the bounce. We're talking four. We're talking Pep. I hear you, but
they slip up again.
What's history told you?
Well, I know history, right? And that history is incredibly impressive because of how hard it is. And we can't assume, Rob, that they're going to keep doing that incredible Champions League latter stages and keep grinding away, winning every single game. That's extraordinary, and they've done it. But it's hard. And now, when I see a 3-point gap there, we're going into the 30th game of the season now. Another slip, and the other two don't slip. I don't know. It looks like it could get much harder for Man City, and well, I think Tim made the point that they could, like, you know what, the Real Madrid games, they might tilt towards the Champions League, or you're not having that. You're shaking your head. I don't even see that.
No, I'm hearing you. I want to hear you out. I want to hear the argument, and I think it's a valid argument.
They're just behind two teams.
Totally agree with it.
Now they're behind two teams now. Man City. There's two teams.
Of course, they're behind two teams. Have they not been in a similar situation before? I mean, I'll tell you what they've got, Rob, and I'm going to the Man City game this week before I head back to the US. I'm going to Man City Villa on Wednesday, which is an interesting game. And as you said, if they were to slip up there or certainly even not win the game, But, Rob, I think during the course of this season, and in credit to you, you've sort of gone, not sure about City. Then we're sure about City, and then seem to be going there. Well, you know, is this like that hunger, that treble, that thing, that you know? When you've sort of at times, and then they were on the run. You went, City look like they're coming back to it, and then now we're going back there a little bit. I still continue to say from day one, City are going to be the team. I've seen what Liverpool are on, and I thought you and Tim made some great points today. I thought the breakdown was excellent. Of the way they won the game, the McAllister goal and things that we'll come to talk about. But I still believe in City, Rob, who didn't play well today, had all the possession, didn't look as dangerous, didn't have as many looks on goal that you would expect. But I still believe in them. I still believe in the group. This wasn't the City team who got beat today, who could have lost it 1-0 on an ugly day and Arsenal got a result and then we're asking questions. I still believe in Pep, I still believe in the group. And I still think, and it might sound a weird thing to say, and City fans may totally disagree with me, that Pep still prioritises the title. They've won the Champions League, and I know to go back-to-back Champions League would be huge and maybe look better on his CV. To win a 38-game Premier League season of this calibre with the three teams in the race, with the quality of teams around them and quality of coaches around them, this is still, I think, a priority for Manchester City to retain the title.
Yeah, and they want to be the first team to win it 4 times on the spin. Never been done in top-flight English football. I think that's a huge thing to go for. I'm going to throw it back to you, Rob, in terms of performance today from some of these City players. And I think we know... We know we appreciate why this game was the way it was. It was mainly because of Arsenal's really strong, organised and aggressive central defenders. Erling Haaland, I mean, maybe, you know, I'm guilty of it as much as anybody else. When there's a big game and when there's such little impact from him, I do... OK, let me throw it as a question. Were you disappointed a little bit in Erling Haaland, Rob, the player that's, you know, you've bought to be that difference maker? Give me your thoughts on him today.
Well, today I thought he was brilliantly defended, to give credit to Arsenal. Yeah. Back two. One got tight, one dropped off. They were physical. It's almost like it's took them 18 months to work it out, but there's almost a bit of a plan now to deal with Erling Haaland. Now, Erling Haaland to Man City, Rob, is the wrecking ball at the top of the pitch that hammers home their advantage when they're dominating game and creating chances. Yeah. They're not particularly creating as many chances, and he's not looking sharp. We'll go on to talk about Liverpool and Mo Salah, 16 goals, 9 assists. Incredible. But his kind of threat, Rob, even before he scores, he smashes them over, he's put a couple down the side, they're working there. If Manchester City had Mo Salah today, they'd have won the game. If Mo Salah would have found them a 1-0. Erling Haaland is not quite in that form at the moment, and the team aren't producing that for him. Yeah. And he's as great as he is, Rob, he's not a kind of, you know, he ain't to skip past three people, drop his shoulder. No. You know, he's not that kind of centre forward, is he?
No, he's not. And it wasn't a day for forwards, Rob. You know, I think we can kind of wrap
up.
It wasn't a day. Every forward you can think of between Saka, Havertz, and Jesus, and Foden, and Bernardo Silva, and Haaland.
Offish day, didn't they?
Yeah, it was not their day mainly because both teams were really good when they didn't have possession of the football, and that's why it ended up being 0-0. Yeah. Let's move it on, Rob, to the early game in the day, if you're ready to move on, which was Liverpool, which was a fun game of football. Yeah. And we talked about it being an awkward game of football for Jurgen Klopp with Brighton, the way that they play, and Roberto De Zerbi, you know, really in the frame, Rob, really in the frame to become
the next
Liverpool manager. It finished up 2-1. They won't come from behind again, Liverpool, this season. Incredible amount of times they've done that this season. Mo Salah scoring a really lovely goal, I thought. Talk to me about how you found this game today and what impressed you most about Liverpool.
Well, I think Rebecca and you guys talked about the graphic that you put out, just their ability from losing position, Rob, and to go down with a beautiful strike from Welbeck, is that this team, if you look across the front line, have an attacking threat that always looks like it's going to get you goals. It can get you, you know, they can score themselves out of trouble, Rob. And that was the way. I thought you made a great point, and I was watching the game, it played out of Liverpool's right-hand side against Brighton's left. So it was Stupinian and Dingra, Conor Bradley and Salah, and you know, McAllister going over that side and making things happen. And it was one against the other. Both were better on the attacking side than the defensive side. There's a freshness about Liverpool at this stage of the season that's impressive, considering what they've gone through in terms of, you know, some star players being out for periods of time, not always having the attack that they'd want. You know, they've nursed Salah back to fitness now and back in the team and scoring, and the threat that can win them the title. His goals, Rob, can win them the title.
Yeah.
You talked about McAllister, and I won't steal your thunder on that. His influence... I'm going to hold my hands up with Endo in midfield, who I wasn't sure would have the athletic ability to hold that number six role for a Liverpool team that at times are going to push people forward. I've got to hold my hands up. I've been wrong. His football IQ is much better than I thought. His positional play, he gets around dangerous areas. He's not the quickest, and he isn't the best athlete, but he isn't off a great football, an intelligent football, and knows where to be. And his kind of... sort of control of in front of the back line is allowing McAllister to go and do the things that we used to see at Brighton, Rob, the things where he was freer, where he could go and make and score and assist and probe. And all of a sudden, that is an absolutely another option that gives Liverpool, makes Liverpool a massive threat, mate, in any game. An absolutely massive threat.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, Rob. That front six, I kind of said today on the show, like with Endo doing his job where, you're right. I mean, to be fair, though, it was the first few games of Endo. And I think we said the same stuff, like, wow, he looks a little bit like overpowered. That's what we said. Totally happy to say, well done.
Hold our hands up, yeah.
Hold our hands up. He has proven himself to be a brilliant little interceptor of stuff, keeps the ball super simple in possession. And one of the things that does is push McAllister forward. Now, apart from, so there's a couple of points here. McAllister, Endo and Szoboszlai, that's a good midfield three now. A little bit like Rice has been pushed forward because of Jorginho. McAllister has been pushed forward because of Endo. Mo Salah wide on the right. Darwin Núñez wasn't his best day, but he's been in good form. And Luis Diaz, who gets the first goal. Now, that six can bed in. Now it can bed in. Mo Salah was out for a little while, and they're very careful to bring him back. He looks in tip-top flipping. I thought he was outstanding today, Mo Salah, and played a lot away from the right-hand side. Lots of time spent in between the lines. You know, more than normal. Like, he's mostly out there, but different today. And so if you put that front six together with games, with rhythm. And then let me add this to you, Robbie Earle, that's making a difference. First off, Quiveen Kelleher, the goalkeeper. The manager describes him as the best number two goalkeeper in the world. He's been excellent.
Don't disagree.
And the emergence of, you know what I'm going to say, Connor Bradley and Joao Kwanzaa.
Kwanzaa is my man. Circle around Joao Kwanzaa, mate. I think Bradley's got more attention, and I think obviously fill in for Trent and whatever. Kwanzaa, mate, could have just saved you $60 million. By the way,
No,
21 years of age, could have just saved you $60 odd million to go and find a partner for Van Dijk.
I want it, obviously we're thinking the same thing, Rob. Those two plus that front six plus a goalkeeper that's really, I mean. Yeah. I tell you, if you're a Liverpool fan, we know what's happened with Jurgen Klopp. We know the last game of the season's at Anfield. And, you know, us as a group of a broadcaster, we're going to be somewhere on that last day. Yeah. It wouldn't surprise me if we're sat pitch side at Anfield to see if Liverpool can pull it off. Because they are 2 points clear, Robbie Earle. You know what I look at with the data and fact? Always look at games lost. Games lost. Liverpool have lost just two. And it's very often
one of them was the Spurs game, man. They were down to nine men, terrible game. Decision. So let me come back on you. Let me come back to you, Mr. Morstow, because I know you have a theory, and I love your theories. I love to dispel some of the theories. So your theory, your latest theory is Arsenal and Manchester City both in Champions League quarterfinals, one v Bayern Munich, one v Real Madrid. So they've got the work cut out. One to get through, and then two they could meet up and. That is going to take some attention, some physicality. We don't know how those will play out. Liverpool, on the other hand, have got the Europa. The Europa would be seen as a significant trophy, but not as big as the Premier League. And I think you were sensing, and Tim kind of went that way again in the studio, in terms of maybe a priority if things go on. And I thought it was an interesting take. First of all, I looked at Liverpool's fixtures, Rob. Yep. They've next weekend, we're in Nashville. We'll talk about that in a moment. But they've got Man United. We know what Man United doesn't think. We know what Man United's now.
They got Sheffield United before that at home on Thursday.
They got Sheffield United at home, which is a win.
Yeah.
So they go to Manchester United, which I'm trying to go to the games, Rob, where I see there might be something.
Yep.
Manchester United, which just that rivalry alone tells you that's not going to be an easy win if they win. But let's just say the next ones to go is a derby against Everton for the very same reason. I think they'll get through that, but again, could be a bit of a difficult one.
That's
just
later,
isn't
it, Rob? That's not been arranged yet, is it? Is that going to be a later rearranged game?
Is it arranged? Or I've just got them down on my list of games
they're
in the list.
But I think that's going to be later. Yeah,
and they've got the Spurs to play, Rob. There's Villa to play. I think the last two before the end of the season, and then there's West Ham, which I think that Wolves, sorry. They're a good football team, but I would just think you can do Wolves. The Spurs and Villa hold a little bit of danger. If they have good days, we know what they can look like. Yeah. So bear with me. We've decided under the Jurgen Klopp, and we don't know how the Europa is going to go and the strength of teams in there. Leverkusen is probably one of the teams in there. They decide they're going to go out the Europa with four games to go because it's all steam on the Premier League. What if the Premier League doesn't come then? A League Cup for Jurgen Klopp on that day you're talking about at the end of the season. Can they afford to gamble on a League Cup being the send-off for Jurgen. I just don't feel they could do that, Rob, right now. I slightly disagree with the theory that if it comes to, we'll bin off the Europa.
I said,
not
yeah.
Sure, I'm just not sure right. with these nine games to go
okay.
that we're there, that stronger position where they go, I think with a four or five-point gap, you go, come on. But I just don't, it's one win and one loss away from something changing.
Even if they, and I hear you, I said, like, they could tilt towards the Premier League, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But if they don't, Rob, and you know, Jurgen Klopp's like you and he wants to go out for every competition, I would also say that Atalanta's easier than Bayern Munich and Real Madrid. So the
absolutely.
Europa League games
absolutely.
Will be, in theory, kind of easier. I'm just trying to... The whole point was those Champions League games that Man City and Arsenal are absolutely going to be going flat out for as well.
Yeah.
You know, they are stressful, difficult matches. And Liverpool's, whether they really go for it or don't quite, they could be a bit more comfortable. Could just give them an edge in terms of resting players, Rob, ready for big Premier League games after those games. I just think it... Listen, we've watched this league for so many years, Rob, and how many times have we... granted, City, they've been like a machine, but we have seen teams after Champions League emotional nights away in Europe somewhere come back and a little flat.
Were one, weren't they, in that?
Yeah, a little flat after those... And I just think, well, at this point, when there's 1 point between the three teams going into this weekend, you've got to think of little differences that could make a difference. And I just think that could be. And they win out or they don't make they win the league. Liverpool, they've got 2 point gap.
Yeah,
you know, it's theirs to lose. And they got
absolutely.
The job done today, Rob. Got the job done today with outstanding Salah,
absolutely.
Outstanding McAllister, and really, really good Endo as well.
Yeah, all looks like it's coming together and we know what Jurgen Klopp's like and we know the emotion he's going to bring to it and they're going to feel it, Rob. They're going to feel it. And we got a proper race, mate. That's the thing I would say based on what we have got a proper race.
Yes.
It looks like Arsenal are going to dig in there and going to be difficult.
Yeah, of course.
City are going to have to prove that they can come again.
And they can.
Liverpool are going to drive it, mate. Liverpool are in pole position now. Yeah. Exact spot they would have wanted to be.
Brilliant. The spirit of performance defines Acura. And now... it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all on its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and A-Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric never could be. It was built with a driver in mind, just like Acura's been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience the electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
All right, mate. So that's fun. And that was the title race kind of chat,
yeah.
I guess. Okay, there's got a little lower in the league table, the race for the Champions League spots qualifying.
Yeah.
Did you go to Spurs? Tell me about that.
I was at Spurs, so we were sitting in the commentary positions, watching the game, seeing it all play out. We saw Spurs. I mean, a couple of things, just very quick background on Spurs, nothing that everybody doesn't know, but when you're in that stadium, Rob, and I got a bit of a tour and saw the whole setup and the the way the football club runs, Rob, you see that, you know, you see the NFL side, you see they've got a racing car track that goes underneath. They've got the NFL, they've got the concerts with Beyonce pictures ever. I mean, it's a football club ready to take off, mate.
Yeah.
That, the training ground and the way that they run their business and these fans coming in from all over the world, it's a proper capital club that's ready to take off. They play the game, 60,000 fans turn up, make a load of noise, few minutes in, they go down 1-0, get caught. With the fullbacks in those advanced positions, they get hurt down the right-hand side. Ross Barkley play particularly well, slots the ball across and Chong puts it in there, the 1-0 down all of a sudden. It looked like it was one of them days, Rob, where maybe after international break and players been away and, you know, different fortunes, didn't quite happen for them. They got in the last third a couple of times and made poor decisions. Luton made some great blocks. They hit the post a few times and Timo Werner went through and slashes one down the side. And you're thinking, oh, is it going to be one of those days? But Brennan Johnson comes on, changes things a little bit. He's lively on that right-hand side. An old goal from Kabore gets him back in. And then we're waiting for a moment, mate. And it's the man again, Youngman Son, who gets the goal, gets the 3 points. Place goes crazy. Angie's happy, talks about that we can be better in possession, we can be a little bit better with to stop people having looks at goal, but he's pleased enough with the football. And then I got a chance, mate, to spend 5 minutes with Youngman Son after, just in the interviewing area. So just talked to him a little bit about his role and the responsibility in it, and he sort of said he's enjoying that now as captain, the responsibility to get the goals, to be a bit of a leader. It's something that's not always been, you know, part of his career. He's just been, you know, a very good player in the team. But now he's taken the captaincy on and what it means. He talked about how the players have adapted to the way that Ange wants to play. And it's so enjoyable. That's the way they go. He said there's a bit of a never-say-die attitude that he says he feels has got stronger under the new manager, like wherever we are in a game. We still feel like we can get something out. We've kind of seen those results. He still thinks they can get better. And he still says he feels like they're in a shout for a Champions League spot. So it was fascinating around him. He's infectious, mate. He's loved by the Spurs fans. He's loved by his teammates. He's brilliant with the press. He's just we talked about Harry Kane leaving and what that might look like for Spurs and, you know, his goals and his presence. And he was a poster boy. Is absolutely no doubt that Youngman's Son has taken that on and in his own way and in his own different unique style, but it is almost like fill the boots in some respect of what Harry was doing. So it was just great to be at the game. It's great to see Spurs. I tell you what, one thing that you know all about. I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but the speed at which Poro and Udogie go high and so high, Rob. Yeah. A couple of times, it leaves him in problems, by the way.
Yeah.
Because the only guy who's really coming back to help is Bissouma, because Saar's gone on, Maddison's gone on, and Luton did a good job of pressing in on Bissouma, and they struggled to get out the back a little bit at times. And I wondered, like, part of me is, I'm watching the game. Like, I mean, as this is happening, Udogie and Poro were in the opposition's half. And I'm kind of thinking, yeah, at some point, maybe, if on the days when maybe the football isn't quite good, one of them might just have to come a little bit deeper.
No,
that isn't going to be his way. But I tell you what, Rob, once or twice, they were lucky they didn't get caught. And they're lucky they didn't
go 2-0
down,
because
that would have been a difficult one.
I know, but they do, don't they? Yeah. And that's...
And he's going to accept that. And it's great. And it's fine. But I tell you what was quite interesting. They got booed off at half-time, Rob, when they were 1-0 down.
Did they?
Which I thought was a bit of a... Yeah, they got booed. And it was a strong boo, like, oh, we're not happy with this.
Wow.
It was a little harsh on the team and harsh on Ange, because we know what he's like. But, yeah, you know, 1-0 down against Luton, they got the job done and everything was rosy and Sonny gets the winner. And they deserved to win. I'm not saying it by any means they weren't. But just those fullbacks going so early, I just wonder, and Rob Edwards had set his team up very well, but I just wonder if at times, I don't know what the alternative is, because it isn't going to be with Ange them coming back, but somebody else might have to be an outlet to get the ball to work it, because they're getting a little bit outnumbered by the press that Luton put on.
Yeah. I'll tell you what the stands out, Rob, is the advantage and the benefit of you going to the stadium. And that's what... obviously we broadcast and we do this show in the US and we go over there and we absolutely adore it, and your experience there at Tottenham Stadium the size of it, the atmosphere, the booing, the way the fullbacks play, you know, certain things, the way that the fans love Heung-min Son. There's certain things that we can add to the broadcast if we're there. And that's why when we go over there, we're going to hopefully go over there for the last game of the season. There's so much that we enjoy about it, whether it's the physicality, the pace of the game. I thought I was interested, Rob, when you said about the first bit of your report, I guess, from Tottenham, about that stadium and how it generates revenues. Now, we all know now with the financial regulations that every club has got to find a way to increase their revenues so they can spend more of those on players. And I think I read something not long ago that Tottenham's match day revenue is like higher than Arsenal's, that they are, because of these events and the NFL and the concerts and everything else and the size of it, 62,000 people, that they're doing a great job of increasing their revenues now. With that, like, why they can grow, but they can grow with those revenues and with success and qualifying for the Champions League, which they're in, they look in pretty good spot right now, very close to Aston Villa, 3 points behind with the game in hand. It just looks like it could be a rosy future for Tottenham with the style of play. That's why I was surprised at the booing, given the entertainment, given the expectations of Tottenham at the end of the season.
Yeah. It is, mate. And just to add one thing, because you make a few great points, and one other thing that kind of hit me, Rob, after about half the day I spent there and as I was going home, how many American fans had travelled to Spurs to watch the game?
Right.
I was inundated. I've had some people on social media. I was inundated. We're talking at least 50 people, Americans, who were at the game. It looks like that's starting to become a trend, mate. You know, it was Easter weekend. People had flown out on Thursday night, got there Friday, had spent a day in London, had gone to the game, flying back Sunday night for Monday. And honestly, from all over America, there's a lot of Spurs fans around. So they're obviously doing a good job as well in terms of that attraction of that global audience.
Yeah, I think you're right, mate. There's more and more people I speak to that are constantly talking about going over to watch games, and I'm like, that is so great. Yeah. Like, if any of our listeners here or viewers or whatever get a chance to actually go to a game, it's so much more than we can describe. You know, of course, our TV pictures is the best that we can, but to be there, and we always say the same thing, Rob, don't we? When we go over there and we do our pitch side hits for our US audience, it's like, you've all got to come over and see this, because this is pretty amazing.
It's incredible.
So, less incredible. I mean, move on from that report. Well done, Tottenham.
One of the big headlines was Man United, mate. And I didn't really see this game. I saw, you know, a few pictures later on, but you saw this one, mate.
I did.
So, where are we with Erik ten Hag seems to be trending again, and not necessarily for a good reason. No. Give me your latest report on ETH.
It's not a great report, and it's becoming definitive. And our regular listeners will know what I've said about Erik ten Hag for probably, I'd say maybe 2 or 3 months, where I'm kind of losing the faith here, but it's all about European it's about Champions League qualification. That was a must-win game, Rob. I said it on the broadcast, that's a must-win game. I think they've got Liverpool and Chelsea next. Chelsea away, then Liverpool at home for Man United. They're oodles of points behind the likes of Tottenham and Villa. They had to win the game. Now, we watched Man United play against Liverpool in the FA Cup. I was away, but I made sure I watched it on my return from travelling. And, there was some fun stuff, fun game, up and down, plenty of fighting, plenty of last-minute goals, plenty of everything that you want to see. But when they go to Brentford, Rob, and I'm sure we've talked about this many times, they can't seem to show that fight, show that quality that's needed in certain games to qualify for important things. They look now absolutely... I'm not going to write them off of fifth. But they are 8 points behind Tottenham, Rob.
8 points,
with nine games to go. That's a lot to make up. And if you're the ownership and you want to kind of reset the club, restart the club, give it a boost in the summer, you get a new staff coming in from the higher. They've kind of getting people in places now all through the club. I would be really surprised if Erik ten Hag is still the manager of next year. And as I continue this back onto ETH, we always carefully watch out for his interview after the game. And we have physically asked him questions. I remember the first game of the season, and we've watched his interviews all season long. This is another one where he offered nothing. He offered no answers, Rob. No answers to our good friend Steve Bowers asking him questions after the match. Yeah. Disappointing performance. What disappoints you about it? Was there a lack of fight? Did they seem to want it more than you? He had no answers. And, you know, you want something. You want something, even if it's a, this is not acceptable, like we go from one to another. You know, we've got to make some big changes. I'm going to be responsible for that. Just give us something instead of... In fact, the one quote I heard, Rob, at the end of all this, I think it's a newspaper quote, was, you know what? At the end of the season, that could be a big point. That could be a big point. In what world is that a big point?
Please, he
said it.
Please.
He literally said that could be a bit a good point. I don't.
ETH.
And I try and do my work in with much respect for these professionals.
Yeah.
I just don't see an elite manager when I watch this team. From terms of the, I mean, they're literally a counter-attacking side. They have less possession again. Yeah. They've scored less goals than Luton Town, Robbie Earle. 40 goals for, 40 goals against, and no real powerful interview afterwards. I don't know where he's going. And another very disappointing Marcus Rashford outing. It's not all good in Rashford's world, I have to think, at the moment.
No.
And a 1-1 scoreline that never really had them. Of course, they got the late goal with Mason Mount. Fair play to him.
Come on, score like the 90 plus six, and then 99.
He scores in the you know, to get a point that they totally deserve. So, I just disappointed with the approach of the team, Rob, given what they needed.
Let me just challenge a couple of thoughts, mate, and see it.
You can try, mate. You go ahead.
I'm trying to be devil's advocate.
Go on, then.
I'm throwing a few things in. At times, does he not say the things we see and the things I think we know because he doesn't want to put that on the players? Does he see it but not say it, or do you don't think he sees it, Rob?
Okay.
It's kind of where I'm at.
It's a reasonable point where you don't want to throw it onto the players, okay? Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
But we're seeing the same things, Rob. We're seeing the same things. We're seeing the same kind of good performances, bad performances. Good Man United, bad. Yeah. This is 29 games now. Goal difference of zero.
Yeah.
So even if he's saying it or not saying it, well, he's not saying it on he's not really being critical with his team, and I respect that, but he doesn't give us anything else. But the team is not getting better. I'll always wait to be more judgmental, Rob, when I have more evidence, right?
Yeah.
And we've had a fair bit of evidence now, and I always like to see progression, even if there's setbacks, but a feeling that this is moving in the right direction with the right person. I mean, how can anybody argue that, I don't know, it's going in the right direction.
I'm trying to find a little. So I'm saying Luke Shaw, Martinez, back in the team, Casemiro, back in the team. You know, is there a few in there that could be... The other place I want to go to, mate, and it's something we've both done. I think we both try and be respectful of managers. We're not hire them, fire them, get them out. I think we like to see people
given the
opportunity to work or get things right or wrong, as the case is. I find Eric Ten Hag a little bit divisive, Rob, in terms of Manchester United fans. There's some that almost like, we just got to support this guy, give him the right thing, and go. And then there's others who are a bit like you, I think, have been patient and not seen progression, have seen a team almost stagnate to a team now who are fifth, sixth kind of best. You know, Spurs is an argument, the way Ange's come in and played. I mean, I'm saying this in all honesty. Aston Villa shouldn't be ahead of Manchester United in the league. And really, Spurs shouldn't, mate, to be honest. They shouldn't, with what the quality they've got in the managers. Different manager with those group of players, I think, gets them above. But the point I'm trying to get to, a little bit with United, Rob, and I feel it more for the fans, because I kind of read two sets of opinions. I'm almost at this point where, you know what, United fans, I don't pay my money and go to Old Trafford every week and support the team and buy the shirts and go and watch them. If you're happy with Eric Ten Hag, then you know what, I'm happy with him. Go and knock yourself out. And if you finish fourth, fifth or sixth, do you know what I mean? And if you for those United fans who want it, I'm with you as well, because I'm more a little bit going down your road, and we have been over the last month, like, Champions League is a big thing for this football club. With the new ownership going in, talking about, you know, this great club and the Wembley of the North and all the things that are changing, they've got to be Champions League every season. That's got to be a given to that football club. And this guy doesn't look this time as though, and I think you said very early in the season, Champions League is going to be a big decider in terms Ten Hag stay and build or does he not? And 8 points behind with 9 games to go, he's got it on, mate. By the way, this Liverpool game next week with Manchester United now becomes huge for both those football clubs, by the way.
Well, huge. I think it's huge for Liverpool. I don't think it is for
Man United. If Man United lose that, mate, they ain't getting top.
Well, I don't think they're doing it anyway.
And if they win might close the gap and give them a little look at it.
All right, if they win the game, what does it mean for the week after? Nothing.
Well, it means that we're back in the Erik Ten Hag. Ooh, you know, he's close. Listen, this guy hung in there. He's got Champions League last season. He's found a way. Can he find a way again to do it this season? It's almost, he's got 9 games maybe to save his Manchester United career.
Okay, before we move on, Rob,
I just move on with
the final thought about him as a manager, right? And you said about the Man United fans, knock yourself out. If you want to stay in, then good. There's three parts of management, right? I'll just do it one more time. There's the man management aspect of it, getting the best from the players that he's got. And I think we all agree that there's certain players, Rashford, Antony, a few others, Mount was bought. Of course, we had the whole...
Casemiro,
We had the Jadon Sancho thing as well. So man management, not really a tick. Then you have the tactical side of things. I'm not sure Man United fans want to see a counter-attacking side. I don't give that. I don't think that's a check of the box either. And then the other one is signings and transfer dealings. And he's brought a lot of players in with the contacts for my
ex. Well, the is some of them aren't his, but... You know,
some of them aren't, but many are.
Most of them he knows or he's had before and bought in. Yeah.
So I think on three sides of...
Yeah, not looking great, is it?
I don't think so, but we'll see. Maybe I'm wrong and maybe they'll bridge this gap and he'll go on and... I think he'll get less responsibility in the transfer market going forward. But it was another bad one, Rob. And I think some people, I don't think I was that critical afterwards. I think a lot of people out there thought this is one of the worst Man United performances for a long period of time. They drew the game.
31 shots in the Brentford had.
Was it 31?
31 shots at goal. Yeah. I think they've had, in the last 4 or 5 games, they've had 100 shots at them. So, no control of the opposition whatsoever.
No. And that's a
counter-attacking team. Against an Arsenal team who played Man City, who had one shot. Man City had one shot.
Yeah.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic. Because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
All right, moving on, Rob. Let's just whip around everything else, mate. We've had a long chat.
Yeah, let's just quickly talk about one more team, Rob, and then we'll just get through the other results. It's Chelsea 2, Burnley 2. It's Chelsea team against a 10-man Burnley. Get a man sent off. It was a bit of a harsh decision to give the penalty, but penalty's given.
Yeah,
he gets a second yellow.
Harsh,
he goes off.
Very harsh.
And he has to go off. Vincent Kompany gets sent off. His team stand firm for him against the Chelsea team, but... Pochettino was quite critical of his team. Things aren't going to plan, Rob. Fans aren't happy at that football club. Is this similar to a Ten Hag situation? Is there a point where, if things continue between now and the end of the season, is this job in jeopardy?
Well, it might be in jeopardy, Rob. Again, this is one of them where what I think might happen, and my own personal opinion on this, I think it could be in jeopardy, yeah. I think it could be when you see Chelsea Football Club in the bottom half of the league table. That's crazy. But what I would say, and my opinion on it, is that this isn't yet all on the manager. I'm so sorry if I go over old ground a little bit, but the same thing stands out for me, Rob. When these young players came in, I said to you on this show many times, we don't know if these are Premier League level. Yeah. And I think we have seen that. We have seen that. Now, is that Pochettino's fault, Rob? Is that Pochettino's fault that all those were brought in, a lot of experienced players were gone, and like, here you go, Poch, you're good with young players, you're experienced with top-level sides, and yeah. Go and make us win. And he can't do it. And I just don't think...
Well, you know, not on a regular basis. They've had some good days, Rob, when we've sort of said that's more like it.
There's been flashes of good stuff.
Yeah.
But I just don't put it all on him, Rob. And I know the Chelsea fans, these letters from the supporters, one group of supporters sort of saying, this is unacceptable, we're going to cheer and boo, and you're going to get more protests from us. And then the other side, I don't know the names of these different supporter groups and fan, like, whatever it is. And then they say, well, no, hang on a minute, we've got to get behind the... So there's an expectation at Chelsea, Rob, and they have come to win a lot over with Abramovich's period of time and the money spent and the managers, and you ain't doing it, boom, you're out. We get a next guy in, next guy, until they find ways to win trophies. Maybe that's the culture, and maybe the fans are like, you know what, it's enough now. We're used to seeing different people, and let's go for somebody else. That might happen. I hope it doesn't, because I think he's a good manager. He's just got a difficult job with so many players trying to be effective in a difficult club, in a difficult league, with so many others in the same situation, Rob. So, I ain't got that much new to say. I didn't see the game. There's one, I think it was in the window of all the games going on at the same time, so I couldn't study this one. But there's no doubt, like, Burnley at home with a man sent off, I think it was the end of the first half, towards the end of the first half, and not winning the game. Yeah. And I know Petrovic threw it in, went through his hands. I saw that, obviously. It's a really
Mind
tough
you,
period.
Jamie Rodriguez had a late one, mate. He headed against the ball and come back and could have gone and won it 2-3.
What do you think, Rob?
Poch gets his first half of the season, mate. For me, Pochettino will be there at the start of next season, and I think when we get to somewhere around Christmas in a window, and there'll be a review of where this team are, how they've developed, is there more consistency, and if not, then I think we might start to see some changes.
Let me just add one point to that, Rob, right? Just thinking about that, right?
Hopefully
gets more time, but they've spent the money. Chelsea spent the money. And with financial restrictions now, Rob, how are they going to fix this problem if they can't spend any more and might have to sell because of financial fair play? How does it change if no
new players... If you're saying, Rob, that it's the players and you're not sure of the players, just changing how does changing the manager make better?
It doesn't.
Solve that issue.
No, but what I'm saying is how... I think my thought was a few months ago, before the Everton points deduction, was like, they bought a bunch of players, that some will work out and there'll be spots in the team where they need to add. Maybe a centre-forward it might be, and maybe another winger because Mudrik and others... But they haven't got the money to do that now. So are they stuck with this squad? Get people fit, of course. But how does it change if they can't spend?
Well, the other thing is, some of the players you thought you might be, you know, Thiago Silva, Raheem Sterling, and one or two others, even Chilwell, I know he's coming back from fitness, but they haven't played at the level that you'd expect them, Rob. So not even some of the kids who you bring in you don't know. Some of the more experienced players, his form has dropped. And so, he's got nothing really to hold on to there. So, more difficult times at Chelsea. Yeah. We'll see how that one all plays out between now and the end of the season if Pochettino is in charge next summer, how they start next year. OK, let's get to those other results. It was a bit of a Midlands derby. Villa, Wolves was a late game. Villa ended up winning this one 2-0. Wolves had a couple of good looks early, but it was Diaby and Konsa with a cross-come shot that ends up in the back net. Villa... hitting a bit of form again, Villa, Rob. That home form particularly is strong again. And Unai Emery's team looking like the possibility of a Champions League spot now, which will be an incredible turnaround for the football club.
Yeah, I watched the game, Rob, and it was a good performance. Nothing outstanding. I think Wolves are kind of running out of steam a little bit. Remarkable.
Yeah, a lot of players missing, weren't there? The front line's different.
He's got 12. Yeah. He said they had 12 senior players fit going into this game. So no surprise that Aston Villa won the game 2-0. Just moving on to the next one. What a game at St James's. Yeah. Now, I know that you've been busy, Rob, but did you get to see any of this stuff? Did you get to see these penalties?
I saw bits and pieces. I was kind of in and out of the press room, so I didn't get a great view. I saw most of what was happening. I think when I got to it at one point, West Ham was 3-1 up.
Okay, so that's a good place to ask you about the next piece. So yeah. West Ham United, 3-1 up, and then in the West Ham penalty box, we have a penalty. In fact, no, the first goal was a penalty. The first one was a penalty with a foul on Anthony Gordon, where he gets his body in front of the defender for the first one.
Yeah, and he got it, it's kind of clever.
Okay, all right.
I think that one,
Then we get the second one where Calvin Phillips has the football in front of his foot and he pulls his foot back to kick the ball up the field. And Anthony Gordon, from behind him,
just puts his foot
reaches around, nowhere near the ball. Actually, he's facing away from the ball, Rob. And as the foot comes through, he makes contact and he basically manufactures a foul.
Anthony Gordon knew what he was doing. He wanted that contact knowing that the referee would have a decision to make. And the referee absolutely bought it. Absolutely bought it.
But didn't he kick his leg?
As Calvin Phillips' leg went back, Anthony Gordon's head was saying, anyway I can get my foot across the line of the ball, we're going to get something here.
So where are you, Rob?
By the letter of the law,
he kicked him.
Yeah, but by the letter of the law, Anthony Gordon is instigating the kick. It's like when you have a penalty in the box and two players are running and then one throws his leg into the back of the other and he goes down and you say there's contact. Yeah, there's contact, but the contact's been made because he's thrown his leg into it.
So it's a no call.
It's a play on. Yeah,
I mean, if you're going to give that, Rob, right? I was thinking about it last night. If you're going to give that, right, then if I'm playing a game now, I'm like seeing that, I'm like, oh, any time.
Of course you are.
Right? Any time a player pulls
leg
foot
goes back,
but I'm literally, I'm going to go like that. I'm going to dive in front of the ball so he kicks me in the head, in the back, or my arm. I ain't got to go for the ball. I just got to get in the way of his. It just can't be
just
right.
Go
it's
in.
Just
he's
not
kicking
right.
Action, and he's kicking action.
Just,
yeah,
he's,
no.
He pulled his foot I mean, back. Oh, here we go. So I'm going in.
And it changes the game, doesn't it? It absolutely changes the game. The momentum changes.
Turns into a crazy atmosphere.
And listen, you know, West Ham have got to control games better from that position and, you know, incredible atmosphere, great couple of goals and great story. But when it comes down to it, a poor decision by the referee who has got done really by Anthony Gordon.
Yeah, there's VAR there, right? I don't get it. Like, they looked at it. And I know we got to be careful with common sense. This is one of those really difficult ones where if you were Pedro Mueller on this call, they're like, well, he kicked him in the leg, so that's a foul in the rules. And technically, but come on, that's not okay. People are going to throw themselves in front of the football just to get kicked.
We've got to be careful the kind of door that's opening then, that to everything can be referred back to the Anthony Gordon one. But Newcastle get the win for West Ham, obviously. A huge disappointment for David Moyes. And Calvin Phillips, we saw, has reacted to a fan who's had some words with him after the game. I mean, just what a terrible time it's been for him since, you know, the move from Leeds to City. Goes on loan. You know, he's made a couple of mistakes now. Goals have been conceded. And, you know, it almost feels like he needs a fresh start somewhere, Rob, to get kickstart his career back again.
Yeah, absolutely right. And
Nottingham Forest won, Crystal Palace one that's just got that one because Palace go ahead through Mateta and then Chris Wood. It's been good for goals recently. Rob, lovely ball in from Gibbs White and a really clever header from him. Decent point for Forest, obviously disappointment with what's gone on with the points deduction from their point of view, but an important point that might be worth something come the end of the season.
Yeah, and they got a massive game on. I watched this game and my note here is Fulham at home on Tuesday, Rob, for Nottingham Forest. At home on Tuesday. You know, Palace at home is a winnable game. Couldn't manage it. Pressure's building at that club. Another chance to get 3 points to really help their cause right now. 17th they are, Nottingham Forest, on Tuesday. So that's another big game. And I mean, Palace are picked up. You know, they're very different under Oliver Glasner.
Yeah, they'll be fine.
Fine. They've got enough points. They've got some, you know, early results early under the new manager and they're in decent position on 30 points. What else have we got? We have got Bournemouth 2, Everton 1.
Yeah.
I mean,
I didn't see this game, mate. I just saw the headline, and all of a sudden I'm thinking, like, in Sean Dyche we trust? Come on, Sean.
I mean, it just can't get... It always seems that Sean Dyche, he's on the edge all the time, from even his time at Burnley. You know, they get the points deduction, they have a brilliant little run of results. So three wins in, like, next four or five games, they get right away from it. And then from then on, they haven't won for, like, ages, and they're right. I mean, they could face another couple of points, possibly. The appeal situation, it's messy, but they just can't win. I mean, the Seamus Coleman own goal is... And he's a legend of the club. It was just a bad individual piece of play. He's just trying to kind of one of those little chest it back to the goalkeeper. Mm. It comes off quickly and into the corner, and they lose the game. I mean, Everton. God, I don't know. It's been torturous being an Everton fan, but it just don't end. When's it going to end for them? And they've got more points potentially.
I know. This time last year, wasn't it? It was last game of the season. We were there against Decore Bournemouth. Decore scores, and the place with it, and it was a bit like everybody was there saying, that's it, not again.
No more drama.
We can't go through this again. Yeah. It might be that they're back there again, mate, this time at the end of this season, hoping to make sure they stay in with the goals. And another great game, Sheffield United 3, Fulham 3. Sheffield United get themselves through. We're not beating Deers with a couple of goals. Yeah. And then Muniz, our friend, our mate. Rodrigo Muniz scoring again, mate.
Underappreciated player.
Since he's got that award, mate, he's been flying. A lovely scissor kick and another goal for him. And another good point on the road for Fulham, who are ticking along pretty nicely. Sheffield United and Chris Wilder, obviously. Going to be usually disappointing to be 3-1 up in the game at that time, and then 68 minutes to be 3-1 up, and then end up 3-3 conceding in the last minute.
Unbelievable scenes. Great. Another amazing match week, a monster long Saturday that we had the four game windows. I just expected more from the Arsenal game at Man City. But other than that, right, we go in now into a fan fest next weekend. Of course, got midweek fixtures. We're back in the studio midweek. But Liverpool sit on top, 2 points clear from Arsenal, three points clear to Man City, and Sheffield United, Burnley, Luton are in the current bottom three in spots in the league. So another fun weekend, my friend.
Yeah, well, just mentioned that we have got that fan fest you talked about in Nashville coming up next weekend. So there's a Friday night, we have a concert. Saturday night's usual full set of games. And then the Sunday, Manchester United v Liverpool, in a game that seems to add even more importance with the weekend's games and obviously midweek games to come as well. So really looking forward to that, to seeing Nashville and taking this show on the road. But for us, that's it, mate. It was billed as the biggest game of the season, Manchester City v Arsenal, but it ended up a bit of a tepid 0-0 draw. How important that point will be come the end of the season, we'll have to wait and see. Or have they handed the advantage to Liverpool? 2-1 winners against Brighton today. They go top of the table with 9 games to play. We'll be back next Sunday, April the 8th. We'll do some kind of edition in Nashville with maybe some of the live fans around us. But we'll try and get that done before we wrap things up in Nashville at the Fan Fest. But for now, I'm Earl. He's Musty, together with the two Robbies. Thanks for watching, listening. Be safe, stay healthy. From the UK, it's a good night from me.
And it's good night from him. Good night.
Good night.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like season tickets to watch your favorite team, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like paying for parking. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.